I don't have a knife. Hello.
Sometimes I don't.
It is linoleum knife.
Sometimes I don't like you at all.
Look. First of all, we need to explain why you're still here.
Yes, yes. Why don't you explain that?
I'm a failure. I fail at many, many things again and again. I mostly fail when it comes to anything that isn't about putting two pieces of food together in a bowl and mixing them together to make you a delicious dinner.
Oh, we're going to play that card now.
Uh-huh. And one of the things that I am most a failure at is putting wires into their sockets.
Why don't you have your headphones on?
That's a very good question. I don't know why I don't have my headphones on. Perhaps because I'm not yet prepared for this podcast. Because
you're being super loud, and I don't think you know you're doing it.
I do not know that I'm doing it. And if you'll just give me one more moment, I will.
Wow, you're failing live on the mic. How exciting.
No, I'm not good at learning things quickly. I learn things slowly. I learn things slowly through many mistakes, through many trials, toils, and snares. Mm-hmm. And then I got my headphones on now.
Yes.
I can hear myself. I knew that I was going to keep failing at that. And so also you became kind of busy with your preparations for going to Sundance.
I could have made time.
And then we had to go see Ride Along. Then we had to go see Jack Ryan. And time just got away from us. And then those dogs started barking.
Yes. And who can forget?
And so I still haven't learned how to set up the podcast yet on my own. I promise I'm going to learn. In 2014, mark my words.
Okay.
Do it. Mark them.
It's all here.
All right. I want to learn how to do it. But I haven't yet learned. To that end, we are recording this on the night before you leave for Sundance Film Festival.
Yes.
And the only film we will not talk about on this podcast is Devil's Due.
Right.
Which neither of us have yet seen. Mm-hmm. I will see it Friday morning. Mm-hmm. You have not seen it at all, nor probably will.
Probably
you.
Never will. Todd okay. is going to review it for the wrap. By the way, for those of you who don't know what this is Linoleum Knife.
Yes.
A podcast of the cinema.
Yes.
I'm Alonzo Duraldi
at yes.
TheWrap.com.
Also true.
The guy who can't put this podcast together on his own to save his life is Dave White of Movies.com.
And I played that music.
Mm-hmm. In quotes.
To open the show. That was Bone All, by the way.
Of course.
A-W-L. Because I'm concerned about our listenership.
Really?
Yes.
We have too many?
We have too many people now. Stop you showed it. Me the numbers this afternoon, and I was shocked. It's just not no longer 3 dozen people. It's not even just 9 dozen people. It's dozens and dozens and dozens times 9 of people. We have a lot of people listening now. Mm. I don't understand that. I'm happy. I guess I'm happy about it. I wish there was a test, maybe. That you had to pass to listen to us.
This is not an elitist program.
I would like it to be. I would like it to be. And
look, it's not like we're making any. It's not like the sponsors are beating down our door. This show isn't going to change.
There is not even
all.
Sponsors is a hilarious word that you were saying.
Sponsor.
There's not even a sponsor. Anyway, I think that by weeding out the weak.
No. We're trying to build here. We want a phenomenon.
Here's the thing. I believe that music will build my kind of listener. Strongly and proudly. Linoleum knife for the linoleum.
don't even know what that means.
So, you know, if you turned off this episode because you just heard Bone All,
but then you wouldn't. They won't be listening to you now.
Then I bid you farewell forever.
Well, you remain calm in knowing that at least every other program, the music is not selected by Dave White. So if
every other week it is.
If Bone All is every other not week. What you want to hear,
every
other week I pick lovely quality music.
Every other week you get me. I just want you to know. And
but soon, it's weird. Soon we'll have theme music.
Soon we're having theme music. We're because all of y'all are now listening. We're worried that we're going to get sued, and so we've got a bunch of musician friends who are feverishly working.
Yes.
On providing us with not just one, not just two, but a variety of theme snippets.
Yes.
So you'll never be bored. Never. You'll always know what you're listening to. Some of it's going to sound like what you just heard, if I have anything to say about it. And
some of it's not, I promise.
And that's what's happening. I think the guys in Bone All, if they discover that we played 15 seconds of their song, I think they might be kind of chill. There are only two of them.
Yeah, because they sound like real chill bros based on their musical output. But,
look, some of the most chill bros I've ever met play or create, play horrible sounding music mm-hmm. or create horrible looking things.
Well, you know, we read
that I love.
We read that book that Kenny Loggins and his wife wrote, and they sound very chill.
They got divorced.
Okay, well, maybe a little too chill. They,
their sensual erotic lovemaking was not enough
to keep them together.
It was enough to write that book about.
Right. Oh, that's sad.
It was not enough to keep them together.
I'm sorry that it didn't work out for the Logginses.
They became divorced.
Oh.
It's weird that we're taping right now, that we're recording right now. It's nighttime.
Yes.
Because of that, I'm drinking white wine like Dina Manzo.
Like a lady of the canyon.
Like a lady of the canyon. Like a real housewife.
Dave White in Play It As It Lays.
I don't prefer white. I like red. Mm-hmm. Actually beer. I prefer beer. But this is what's in the house. There's pumpkin and Christmas beer left over from Christmas that I will never touch. We might have to fob it off trickery style on a friend.
Can we cook something in it?
No.
Just a thought.
Anyway, big old glass of white Real Housewife wine.
So yeah, so now next week's show...
I'm going to be drunk by the time we're done with this.
Next week's show with the presumably sober Dave White. We'll talk about Devil's Due. We'll talk about the stuff I saw at Sundance. But this week, we have three movies that we've already seen.
Two of them suck.
Spoiler. Guess which ones. And we're going to get caught up on some, not all, Letters. But, you know, we're going to make some headway.
We didn't do Letters for like 3, going on 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Because we had so many guests. Mm-hmm. So we're real backed up on Letters.
Yes.
Some of these letters that I'm going to do today are about Christmas, which is whatever, who cares. And next week we will get to the ones about all of you who hate Manola Darkus.
There was only one.
No, there were two at least. Really? Okay. Yeah. She didn't inspire the kind of Jack Morrissey level vitriol.
No.
Mostly because I don't know why. I think
she did go after at least one nerd sacred cow, though.
Yes, so. She did. And that made some folks angry.
Yes.
And I think that's great.
Yes.
Even though I'm a fan of the person that she slagged.
We like people to be provocative on this show.
Yes.
And Manola is nothing if not that.
She is, yes. What happens now?
Let's start in.
Why don't you just begin talking about a movie?
The Nut Job.
It's almost my bedtime. That's the other thing.
It's late for you.
Not only am I drinking white wine.
It's after 8 p.m.
It's 8:10 p.m. And I should be already... I should already be... showered and in my pajamas, covered in emollients, with my foot socks on, with the lotions on them to make them nice and soft.
Your cuticles.
Yeah, everything should be in. There should nothing but should be happening with me right now. I should be on the couch pretending to watch something on television that you are also actually watching.
While you have to.
While I nod off.
Yeah.
This is. Instead, I'm having to think clearly.
Mm. You can manage it. I believe in you, Dave White.
The nut job.
The nut job.
It is so terrible.
It is really bad. It looks nice. I'll give them that. And certainly not all animated films do. It does. It's not a horror to the eyes. But brother, this movie is so crazily disjointed and schizophrenic. It's coming at things from a million different directions. It's about a bunch of squirrels in a park, and winter is coming.
Winter is coming. It's about a particularly obnoxious libertarian squirrel.
Right.
Who might as well carry a copy of The Fountainhead around with him. He is all about his own thing.
Yeah.
And not about helping any other squirrels survive.
And so, you know, you think, oh, well, this is going to be the movie where the renegade learns to form a family and, you know,
not really.
Learn the help. But no, you think it's going to be that.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you come to find out that this movie, in addition to being anti-objectivist, is also anti-collectivist.
Yeah.
Because apparently there's some hinky things going on with the whole idea of the communal food and who's using the food supply as a way to control the masses. And again, this is a kiddie movie about talking squirrels that we're talking about here. We're getting deep in the weeds, but that's how it's presented. Also, it's set in the 1950s. All the cars have like fins and that kind of thing. But
Oppa Gangnam Style.
Sexy lady. Yes, so that's going on.
When they
on.
Find the nut shop, the squirrels begin dancing to Gangnam Style.
Yeah.
And then you wait through this whole terrible movie until you get to the closing credits. And they trot out an animated Psy who sings and dances Gangnam Style.
With a bunch of squirrels.
With all the squirrels from the cast. And all the human bank robbers. Everybody. They all dance to Gangnam Style. Even though it is set, according to the press notes, I read through the press notes, mm-hmm. It is set in 1959. Hmm. Why is this happening? No one knows.
Why, couldn't they be dancing to Eddie Cochran or something?
It's a Korean film. Mostly a Korean production.
Korean produced, yeah.
And
but set in the United States.
And so, obviously, that had something to do with it.
Yeah.
Also, the other thing that is wrong here is that...
There are human bank robbers, incidentally, which have very little to do with the plot. But
they're using the nut store as a front for their
They're breaking into the bank next door. Yeah. It gets very complicated.
It's about double crosses and double crosses and...
There's a talking pug.
Shifting alliances and you learn... Complete spoil. I'm going to just spoil everything here. The raccoon is the a bad guy, sort of a totalitarian socialist, and
he's Napoleon from Animal Farm, basically.
Yeah,
but it's a raccoon with the voice of Liam Neeson.
There's a rat that looks like the one from Ratatouille.
Mm.
It's got producer fighting all over it.
Yeah,
like people behind the scenes. Fighting about stuff.
It's got a lot of bad notes fingerprints.
And it is so deeply conflicted. This movie is at war with itself.
Mm.
Everybody got a little bit of their way. And so everything turned to chaos and crap.
Nothing makes any sense.
And so if I were going to recommend it at all, it would be as...
A screenwriting exercise?
An exercise, yeah. Like, go look at this thing that got destroyed and then released into theaters.
Yeah, like map out the three different movies that it could have been. Like, yeah. Find the elements of all those different, you know.
When it started, my first thought was, oh, it's going to be that darn squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah. If only.
It's not even the kind of movie where he learns how to just be nice.
No, because then at the
end, it's after my bedtime.
If we're gonna spoil, we might as well. It ends like the Dark Knight, where basically the selfish squirrel saves the day, but realizes that the idiot, vain squirrel who thinks he's a hero needs to be the one who takes the credit because, you know, that's the hero you need as opposed to the hero you whatever that speech is from the Dark Knight. Yeah, this movie's very annoying.
So, don't go see it.
No. Go see Frozen again.
Unless you are the kind of person who needs to go see something like this, just so you can say, yeah, I understand what I'm watching. Mm. You know, I understand that this is a failure that I'm about to go look at.
Right.
And
is interesting as such.
It is interesting as a complete and total chaotic failure.
Right. Fans of fiascos, line up now.
Right. It's not Delgo?
No. But or Mars Needs Moms.
Or Mars Needs Moms, or...
Escape from Planet Earth.
Or Food Fight, which we haven't seen, but we're very excited about seeing. Got to watch
Food Fight.
Yeah. But we, you know, we are warning you a lot about this. If you have children, distract them with a wadded up ball of aluminum foil. Like, dangle it from something. Be like, look, you don't
shiny
over here. Yeah. Don't let them.
Spare them and yourselves.
Go to Baskin Robbins and get them an ice cream cake and let them eat all of it. Because here's the thing. You will save yourself the problem of seeing this film. You'll save your child from seeing this film. And your child will get so sick that it will go to bed for the rest of the day and you won't have to deal with it. Except for, like, the Pepto-Bismol and holding their head while they puke. You just put them in bed.
That's a parenting tip from Dave Weiss.
Better thing to do as a parent
than to make them watch.
Yeah.
Let them drag you to nut job.
Especially fond of the Baskin-Robbins ice cream cakes.
Because you get to do the song.
They're very good. Also, I get to do the song about ice cream and cakey cake.
Yeah.
Ice cream and cake, do the ice cream and cake.
Is that a dramatic reading?
It is.
All right, so enough of that.
So then there's Ride Along.
And then there's Ride Along.
Which is also crap.
Yeah.
Just get the crap out of the way.
Yeah, I didn't realize until I heard you talking to somebody else about it that it was PG-13. It was like, oh, well, no wonder then. Like, I mean, this movie has a lot of problems, but that's certainly one of them. You don't cast Kevin Hart and Ice Cube in an action comedy and then, like, dial it down to PG-13. Or you get something as lame-o as this.
Yeah.
So this is basically a yet another 48 Hours retread. Kevin Hart is a security guard at a high school, but he's just got into the police academy, and he is going to marry the sister of the tough cop played by Ice Cube, and Ice Cube wants to dissuade him from both the sister and the police academy, so he takes him on for a ride-along for the day, and of course drags him in all these very bizarre and dangerous situations. But wouldn't you know it, you know, Kevin Hart is plucky, and he's observant, and he picks up on things, and he helps with clues, and blah, blah, blah.
So it's Stupid Training Day.
Basically, yeah.
And Unfunny 48 Hours.
Mm-hmm. All wrapped up in one neat little package.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are some funny moments.
A few.
I laughed about half a dozen times.
Maybe.
I always laugh when Kevin Hart shrieks and falls down.
Well, then there's plenty of that.
I think that's very funny. I will laugh at him doing that again and again.
This is the kind of movie where, like, Ice-T is the rule breaking cop who's always
Ice Cube.
What did I say?
Ice-T.
Sorry, Ice Cube.
He's on Law and Order SUV. I know.
He's the guy who sang Cop Killer and now plays a cop. Ice Cube.
Ice Cube is the guy who sang F the Police and now plays a cop.
Right. And does all those crappy Are We There Yet movies.
Right.
Ice Cube is the kind of tough, rule-breaking cop whose boss is always yelling at him, and you keep waiting for the scene where he's going to be made to turn in his gun and badge.
Ice Cube is down with the PE. Now every single B want to see He.
Stop it.
Sorry.
Just stop.
That didn't work at all.
No.
If you know the song I'm talking
just
about.
Just stop.
I am not drunk. I'm just sleepy.
But entertaining, either way.
I'm just making up for the not having spoken very much last
episode. You were pretty quiet last
I was very quiet last episode. Well, you know, you've got Manola and Robert, you know, and they're guests, and you don't want to stomp all over them talking.
Well, you could have helped me with some questions.
They're saying funny things. You had all the questions. Mm. I was just enjoying myself.
Fine.
I sit and I listen to Manola and I think, smart lady, I'm going to listen to everything she says. Like, that's just all I ever do.
Yeah, it's tempting. I know what you mean. Yeah, I mean, I can barely even remember this movie now. I saw it a week
because
ago.
It's stupid and boring. Because
it's got four writers. It's a January release.
The bad guys are the bad guys you see, and then the bad guys you don't see.
Yes, although there's a ta-da reveal that is, if anybody is surprised by the ta-da reveal in this movie, then go see a 100 other movies, because you've clearly never seen one before.
And, you know, Kevin Hart has to use his idiot information.
Yeah, his stupid, like, video game
knowledge
savvy.
And stupid stuff like that to solve the crime. Which, you know, he does. Which means he's a great cop.
Right.
And he's allowed to marry Ice Cube's sister. Here's the problem. The major problem. Two major problems with the film.
I don't want this to be a hit because I don't want it to become a franchise.
Yeah. Two major problems with the film are that it's not rated R.
Mm-hmm.
And it should have been wilder and more profane and just more of everything.
Like, they totally rip off the Eddie Murphy, you know, fast talks a redneck bar in 48 hour scene, only in this movie it's at a strip club, and it's in one of those magical PG-13 strip clubs where they've all got bras on.
Yeah, they all dance in bras. Because who doesn't want to pay a $20 cover to go into a stripper bar where the women are all wearing bras?
Yeah, you're going to make it rain.
You totally want that.
You're going to make it rain when Julianne Hough comes out in her, like, in Rock of Ages.
If I'm going to go to a stripper bar, I want to see the boobies. And I'm a homo. And I would still rather go see the boobies.
Yeah, you cannot motorboat a woman wearing Across Your Heart.
That is correct. So, here's the other problem with this film. Because it is not rated R and not profane or wild enough, these two actors are constricted.
They're playing piano with mittens on.
Ice Cube is not the badass that he's supposed to be.
Mm.
And Hart is not the crazy R-rated wild man that he should be. Now, we watch Real Husbands on BET. Right. That show's funny.
Yes.
Somehow they managed to be funny on a PG-13 scale on television.
Right.
This film did not do that.
No.
And it's a poorly written, mediocre material that isn't worthy of these guys, because I like Kevin Hart. I think he's really funny.
No, absolutely.
And I like Ice Cube.
And here's the thing. They have both been funny in films made by the same director.
Yes.
The guy who made this made Think Like a Man.
Yes.
And he made Barbershop.
Yes.
So it's not like he doesn't know what he's working with here. He doesn't know how to get good stuff out of these guys. He's done it before. But this script is awful. There's like four different writers, so you just know it's been through a million drafts. It probably was originally envisioned as a vehicle for Will Smith and Zach Galifianakis. I don't know. I'm just going to pull those out of the sky, you know.
Yeah.
One of the writers actually was that Jason Mantzoukas guy who is on The League and does that podcast, How Did This Get Made?
Who is he on The League?
He's the Brolo on The League. He's the brother-in-law, Ruxin's brother-in-law.
Yeah.
Big, crazy bearded guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, this movie is terrible.
Well, then, here's the answer. More producer tampering.
Yeah, probably so, yeah. I mean, it's the theme of the week.
More notes that ruin everything.
Yeah.
Because this could have been something.
Yeah, I mean, it's a basic framework, but if you'd hung the right stuff on it, you wouldn't mind that you've seen the setup a million times.
It's a bummer. And if you watch it on cable someday, you'll watch it and you'll go, every once in a while, and then you'll forget you ever saw it.
Yeah.
It's really a drag. Tika Sumpter from A Medea Christmas,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, And as the only woman in the film with more than five lines of dialogue, she naturally...
And the only woman in the film that isn't a stripper.
Right, yeah. So she, of course, gets taken hostage at one point. And there's, like, more transphobic humor, because we weren't
in
the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, there's an exceptionally masculine woman with a beard.
Yeah,
who's a which biker. You kind of never see, unless you're in San Francisco... Among
a very specific subset of lesbians.
You know, hardcore butch lesbians that are still lesbians but growing little wispy goatees.
Right.
Which is a thing I saw about 10 years ago.
Yeah, that was a...
I don't know that I've that seen had a moment. It since.
I don't know if it really...
But...
I think now it's like you go trans or go home.
Yeah.
You
know? I like that. That should be on a t-shirt.
There you go.
Go trans or go home. But yeah, this film is actually transphobic.
Yes. There was another movie
in a way that isn't malicious, in a way that's just stupid.
Grudge Match was the other one, which also stars Kevin Hart.
Yeah, well,
I'm not blaming Kevin Hart.
He's in a minor role in Grudge Match, but yeah, it's not a malicious kind of transphobia. It's just a stupid.
It's a lazy kind.
Yeah. Anyway,
it's the what? This is offensive. I hadn't gotten the memo for 10 years.
Nobody told me. Hey. Don't they like to be called things anymore? No?
Is that, that's not a thing?
No. Mm-hmm. The end of that discussion.
Yes.
It's stupid.
Yes.
Terrible.
Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit.
Jake
Ryan Shadow Recruit.
Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit. I had a good time.
It's entertaining.
It is entertaining. That's kind of all it aspires to be. It's all it... needs to be.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Batman Begins, the Alex Cross, the, you know, let's start over again with the origin story. So, of course, it's Chris Pine, because he's already doing that in the Star Trek movies. And it's, you know, it's fine. There were moments where I sort of glazed over when they tried sort of explaining what the plot was about, but as long as it's just about, like...
You must have glazed over for 3 seconds, then, because... The plot is actually quite simple.
All right. It seems like there's a lot of moving parts, and I wasn't sure what they were all doing there. But
Russia believes it's 1962, and they are having a Cold War with us.
Yes. Russia gets mad because the UN approves a Turkish oil pipeline.
And so, to that end...
They're out to destroy the dollar.
They're out to destroy the entire American economy after another 9/11.
Right.
They're going to pull another 9/11 on us... And then kill the economy for good? I don't know how that would be, but another Great Depression.
Okay, but see...
Worse than the one that George W. Bush already put us into.
Right. Although, again, I'm not going to get into the plot stuff because it would get into spoilers, but I just... There seemed a little much. Anyway, so Jack Ryan is studying at the London School of Economics, getting his PhD when 9/11 happens.
Origin story.
So yeah. So then a year and a half later, he is in the Marines. He's in a helicopter in Afghanistan, which gets shot down. He has a really bad back injury. They don't know if he's going to walk again. He gets sent back to Walter Reed. His physical therapist is a plucky young medical student played by Keira Knightley, giving her all to try and be an American accent.
An ungainly American accent.
Yeah. It's gawky, as I called it on the rap. And he also...
But she never lapses.
No. It works.
She sounds like she's from nowhere.
Yeah.
Like she... And you can feel her trying really hard.
It's almost a Lady McGregor.
Yeah.
In that kind of thing. He also catches the eye of Kevin Costner, who is a naval officer who also happens to work for the CIA. And they basically recruit Jack Ryan. They tell him, go back to school, get your PhD, go work on Wall Street, and, like, be on the lookout for terrorist money changing hands, being filtered through, you know, these big banks, right. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So, indeed, 10 years later, we get to 2013, and that's what's happening. He's seeing all these Russian accounts from overseas are being hidden, so he goes to Moscow to try and figure out what's what, and comes face-to-face with Kenneth Branagh, our director, also playing the hammy Russian villain.
Pure evil. The first thing you see him doing is kicking someone. Like a servant or a nurse.
Yeah.
Like the nurse whose job it is to inject him with his daily dose of...
Something.
Some, you know, sedative. He just... The nurse does it wrong, and he kicks him into a pulp. And,
yeah.
And they're like, oh, you're that kind of bad guy. Well, great.
So, yeah, he's very...
I love that kind of bad guy.
He's very clipped and snarly, and he's a lot of fun. I mean, it's hammy, but it's entertaining. And, you know, Jack Ryan goes to Moscow, and he's got to kill somebody for the first time, and you know, he's intrigue and sneaking in and sneaking out. And
yeah, I don't want to really give away the things that happen in the movie, because even though it's not nothing that you haven't seen before, it's still fun to watch it unfold.
Totally.
And the suspense is there. Like, if you thought that maybe downloading stuff couldn't be made suspenseful, perhaps you saw Paranoid.
Paranoia.
And you learned just how unsuspenseful downloading things could become. They make it suspenseful here. Like, Kenneth Branagh knows what he's doing.
It's weird, though. There are
with this kind of dopey movie.
There are... The movie seems to, at times, be about paranoia, or about, like, you know, who can you trust, who can't you trust. I mean, it's no coincidence that the two movies that people in the movie watch are Sorry, Wrong Number and Rosemary's Baby.
Yes.
But ultimately, it's not really about that.
No.
So much.
No. Any sort of other reading of this film that you could extract from it.
It's been hammered out.
Has just been abandoned. Yeah. You know, there's nothing complex. There's nothing,
subtextual.
Political, really.
Yeah, no.
Other than the fact that it is a post-9/11 film.
Yes. And they use there's even some footage of 9/11, but not so much that it's gross.
It's
like just enough
split
to
second.
Kind of, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I've never I think I started The Hunt for Red October and never finished it. I think I've seen one other Jack Ryan movie. I have no baggage with this character. So
yeah, the rebooting of him.
If they want to start him over,
is not a big deal. Like, I don't know anyone who other than The Hunt for Red October, I don't know anybody who would say, oh, yeah, those are my favorite movies. Those Jack Ryan movies, boy, those are great. Like, maybe you're...
Who's your favorite Ryan? Harrison Ford or Ben Affleck?
Maybe your dad, you know, like, not your dad personally.
I know.
Because he's not alive, but...
One's dad.
One's father, you know, perhaps, who's into that kind of thing.
Right.
But these are just pretty good movies that people go see because it's a thing to go see.
Yeah. They are, well, you know.
They don't add a lot to the world of cinema.
They are the movie versions of airport novels.
Yeah. And as that, they are heartily entertaining. I know that Ben had some trouble with the spy details.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Mankiewicz, your bro on What the Flick.
Yes.
And when he said that, I said, you know what? I am not a spy. And because I'm not a spy, I believe everything a spy movie tells me. Because it's this shadow world.
Right.
Where, you know, secret people are taking extraordinary measures to save our lives from unseen monsters that are trying to destroy us all.
And everyone's triangulating cell phone calls.
And everyone's doing all kinds of technological things that I don't even understand what they're doing. They're pulling things up on computers and everything's so fast. And I just think, well, obviously. Obviously,
this is one
on
of the,
some other level of reality that I'm never going to be a part of, this happens. People just do this stuff.
This is one of those movies where they make computer downloading a lot sexier than it is in real life, in terms of there's all these animated graphics and things that you would never get in an actual, you know.
You don't know. Maybe the world of spy people have different computers.
I suspect.
Maybe they have the advanced computers
that the rest shine of us a light in your face.
Don't even know about yet. We don't know. It's a shadow world. He's a shadow recruit. Don't you see?
It's in the title and everything.
Yeah. So I believe everything.
Right.
Whatever happens in a spy movie, I believe it. If James Bond has crazy gadgets, they exist. If he's jumping on a train and fighting a guy for miles under tunnels and things on top of a train, there is a spy dude out there that can do that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I'm generally with you. I mean, I'm sort of willing to just go with it.
I believe everything in a spy movie. Because who am I to say it doesn't exist?
Right.
I'm no spy.
You're not a cow.
No. So, yeah, pretty good. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough. That's quite enough.
Yeah, I mean,
You know, all the other. If you don't live in New York and Los Angeles, you are now getting the rollout of all the awardsy kind of movies. So the stuff like Jake Ryan, stuff like Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit, or Ride Along are the kinds of movies that you go see if you are aggressively against seeing
the
Oscar kind of films. But otherwise, this is a thing that's out there that won't kill you and won't make you hate life.
Yeah, and for a January movie, that's high praise indeed.
And Chris Pine is all right.
Yeah.
As the new Jack Ryan.
Mm-hmm. And Kevin Costner, is aging well and is sort of, he's the guy who used to play the Chris Pine characters, and now he's playing the Donald Sutherland guy on the bench.
Yes.
And he's good. He's fine.
One question.
Shoot.
At one point, Kevin Costner shows up with a dog.
Yeah. What happens to the dog?
Hands him off to Chris Pine and says, "You just have this dog." And then the next scene, Chris Pine does not have that dog.
No,
the dog is nowhere.
The dog disappears.
Where did the dog go?
I don't know. But you know who doesn't care?
You know who?
All the people who are crying about the cat in Llewyn Davis.
That's right.
They don't care about the Russian dog.
That's right.
So shut up, Llewyn Davis haters, with your cat crap.
If the Llewyn Davis people see Jack Ryan, they're going to get real upset about that dog.
Those cat people don't give dogs a second thought.
Are you sure?
Yes. They think that dogs, for some reason, are like, they can roam the world and whatever, they're fine.
No.
Cats are so special.
Cats roam the world. Cats will leave you. Cats will leave the home they've lived in for years and never come back.
Yeah.
And they don't care.
Cats are bored with you. But those cat people could not care less about the dogs.
The only reason that cat in The Incredible Journey found its way back is because it had two dogs with it. That cat didn't care. That cat was like, "Are you guys going to get me some food?"
They guilted him into
it. All right. I'll go wherever you guys are going as long as there's food involved. Okay.
fine. All right. Letters or DVDs?
Well, DVDs.
DVDs. Mine is coming out this week. It is the Criterion edition of It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, which celebrates its 50th anniversary, or I guess just celebrated it last fall. And it is amazing. It is a 4K digital transfer. It is a 202-minute extended version of the film.
Yeah.
Reconstructed by Robert A. Harris, including visual and audio material from the longer original Roadshow version, including some scenes have been returned to the film here for the first time with 5.1 surround master audio soundtrack. There's a new commentary that includes our friend Michael Schlesinger, a new documentary, talk show appearances from the 70s, press interviews from the 60s, just amazing stuff on here, so it's going to be awesome. If you are remotely a fan of this movie, you will totally want to pick that up.
Andrei Tarkovsky's Nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
Some people call it Nostalgia. But they are pains in the ass, those people.
Like the people that say Solaris.
Yes. Don't try.
Unless you were an actual Russian.
Yeah.
And even then...
It's out on Blu-ray this week.
Yes, from Kino.
It is maybe his most abstract film.
Mm.
About a poet who is, essentially suffering from acute nostalgia. And lots of dreams and memories.
He made it while he was in exile, right?
Yes. And he'd left. It was his last film his last film in Russia, I think, or maybe his first film after out of Russia. Yeah. And something he said about the film himself that was that he wasn't interested in the development of the plot.
Okay, then.
And that makes it amazing. So,
because usually he was such a stickler for that sort of thing.
I'm going to go take this Blu-ray to our friend Dave's house, mm-hmm. a different Dave. Mm-hmm. Another. Imagine, I know another person named Dave.
Well, that's why we call you Dave White, because yeah. there's so many Daves.
And put it up on his Blu-ray player with the giant screen and pretend I'm at a movie theater.
Nice.
And if he wants to watch it too, he can, but I bet he won't. He might.
We still need to go over there and watch the Russian Ark Blu-ray.
All the Russian things. Everything Russian, except those Olympics.
Yes.
Screw those.
Boo.
So, all right. Got a lot of letters. We're not going to catch up on all of them right now, but we're going to catch up on some of them.
Right okay.
Now. Here are some of them. Some of these are lists. Some of these are questions. Some of these are about Christmas. Dear David Alonso, I love your podcast.
Yay.
Especially the random tangents, periodic bickering, and occasional blinds knocking things off shelves. I have a request for you. Can you please explain to me why you, and seemingly everyone who submits a top 10 list to you, loves Spirited Away? I admit, after hearing about it on Linoleum, I watched it after hearing about it on Linoleum Life, but I'm a little embarrassed to admit I didn't quite get it. I really wanted to love it, since everyone else does, but it didn't. It just didn't happen for me. And I just lost the letter because I hit the wrong button.
Damn.
And I'm going to scroll down again. My computer is failing me right now. Here, I'm back. I'm back to life.
Back to reality.
Maybe you explain it to me. Maybe if you explain to me why it's so great, I can watch it again and hopefully get more out of it. Thanks, and keep being awesome. Andrew from Guelph? Guelph?
Guelph, I think.
Ontario, yeah. Canada. Thank you, Andrew, for being Canadian.
Yes. Well, okay, how do we explain Spirited Away?
There's not really a good way to explain
it. Okay, well, there's for one thing, when Miyazaki made it, he said he wanted to have a film that would give, like, 9-year-old girls sort of a role model, like something to aspire to, and because that's the age where they sort of start tuning out and not being interested in, you know, the world, and they just, you know, kind of go off to their own stuff.
As early as 9?
Yeah.
I think it's later than that.
Well,
but yeah. Go on.
I think there was some friend's kid who was, like, you know, staring at her phone or, you know, like, just sort of disengaging.
Well, you should take that phone away.
Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah. I think he wanted to make a movie for her. So he wanted to make a movie with a sort of a young heroine who has to save the day and who has to go from being kind of detached and, you know, selfish to actually sacrificing and making an effort to make things turn out okay. I think there's a lot of the film that has to do with a very specific kind of Japanese mythology that I don't understand myself, so I couldn't really walk you through it. I just sort of go with it as kind of a dreamlike state once she goes into the realm of the spirits and goes to work in the bathhouse where they all go. I don't know. I think it's extraordinary to look at. The visuals are incomparable. I think it's a moving story of a girl who has to sort of become engaged with life and
yes.
and has to rely on her own strength and her ability to make friends and you know and uses her ability to sort of not just get herself out of a bad situation but help other people out of their bad situations as well. I just find it captivating.
I think you're perfectly right. It's as surreal. It is as surreal as, you know, Alice in Wonderland.
Sure. Yeah.
But it has, I think, more to say, in a way, because
it's got a more active heroine.
It is about a young girl who has to figure it out.
Yeah.
And learn to deal with what comes to her and to be strong. So I'm, you know, it's a lovely movie. It's visually beautiful, and
I think
that's about it.
Really. I think that we, the viewer, like our heroine, is sort of thrown into this land with no explanation, and we sort of piece it together the way she does, you know. I don't know what else to tell you. It's a wonderful film.
Just accept that someone is a radish.
Yeah, radish spirit. I'm sure there's a lot of writing on this film. I'm sure our friend Charles Solomon has probably written about it in various places. Read the Wikipedia page. Sometimes I find that helps. on a film that's really sort of dense and got a lot of strange things going on. Give it another chance, though, because it really is an amazing movie.
Hey, David Alonso, I have a suggestion regarding your next DVD commentary. Columbiana or Cabin in the Woods?
Oh.
A long time ago, long, all caps, you both mentioned that you would like to talk more in depth about these movies once they were available on DVD, but this never happened. How about doing one or both of these movies in a future commentary? Love the podcasts and the new website. Reese from Dallas.
Thank you, Reese. That's a very good suggestion. We will take it under advisement.
The next one we're working on is The Apple, and it will probably be available as early as next week.
Yeah, before the end of the month.
We've done the research. We need to just time it out and get it recorded.
Yeah.
This letter is from, name is at the end, Colin from Bath, England.
Oh, I think he's written before.
This is kind of a long one, but this is why we're here. You may remember that I sent you a couple of top tens earlier in the year where I vociferously defended The Shawshank Redemption, and you were vaguely impressed that I saw 120 films at the cinema last year. This year it was 141, so good for you, Colin. Nice. I've been catching up on your episodes while putting together my review shows for my own podcast, Raw Footage, at raw-footage.co.uk. Again, raw-footage.co.uk, so y'all can go check that out. And your discussion of Love Actually has prompted me to write you about Christmas here in England. In general, you are right, and Christmas tends to be a very secular time period here, a very secular time period with Christianity, or indeed any religion, taking a backseat to rampant commercialism and forced familial bonding. We get lots of Christmas carol concerts broadcast on television, but that's more or less it. However, there is a small section of the press that tries to stir up the death of Christmas every year, which is just basically the same thing as
the war on Christmas.
Our war on Christmas people.
Right.
That section of the press is called the Daily Mail. Think Fox News. Oh, I know what the Daily Mail is. Think Fox News in print form. One of their favorite things to bring up is Winterville. This story is over a decade old and supposedly tells of a local council somewhere in England that banned references to Christmas and instead replaced it with the made-up celebration of Winterville. Of course. This is a Nick Frost, Simon Pegg movie comic. Of course, the whole thing was bollocks, and it was simply the name of a collection of secular festivities that Birmingham City Council organized in 1997 and 98. Nobody ever said that it was replacing Christmas, it was just running concurrently. It's worth pointing out that Birmingham has a large community from the Indian subcontinent. Despite this simple explanation, the British press, particularly the Daily Mail, regularly comes up with the story that Winterville is going to replace Christmas in our civic lives so as not to offend the Muslims and the Hindus. Much as we hate to admit it, this side of the pond where America goes, we tend to follow, and I have a horrible suspicion that a more religious approach to Christmas is coming. I think the vanguard of this is the Christmas candle, which we failed to get out to Lancaster. Somewhere else. Some other town outside of the city.
Yeah,
we didn't get there to see it. We were all excited.
Depths of Southern California.
We were gung-ho about it, but then Christmas got in the way.
Lancaster?
Somewhere. This is the first time in my memory that an overtly religious film has been given a reasonably big cinematic release. It didn't actually make it into cinemas near where I live in Bath, in the southwest of England, but it's a worrying first step. Granted, the fact that it got cinematic distribution probably has more to do with the acting debut of Susan Boyle yes. than the religious themes of the film, but I hope it's not the tip of the iceberg. I am a total Scrooge slash Grinch when it comes to Christmas and hate the holiday and all the holiday films. For this reason, I did not send you a list of my favorite Christmas films because I don't have any.
Oh. But do you like the Tesco ads, Colin?
Instead, I'm going to repeat. I bet he doesn't even like those they're not Tesco ads.
No,
they're
the other ones. I was referring to the Spice Girls.
John something.
Yeah, the ones with the
name of the store with the
bunny and the bear.
Lily Allen singing a song.
Oh, God, that commercial.
Instead of, and yes, British people, that stuff makes it over here because of internet.
Yes.
Everybody knows what y'all are doing all the time because of internet.
That's right.
Instead, I'm going to repeat
like what Susan Boyle.
Instead, I'm going to repeat what I did last year and send you my top 10 films that were released in the UK mm-hmm. in 2013.
Okay.
On my own podcast, I take the start of the year. We can listen to his podcast.
We should check it out.
On my own podcast, I take the start of the year to be Boxing Day, the 26th of December, so I have time to put my top 10 together. Therefore, films that have only just been released over here, like All Is Lost, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, and American Hustle, don't qualify.
Well,
yeah. Tell them, man! With that caveat in place, here's my list of films that are fun to enjoy. The Act of Killing. This film nearly broke me. It joins Amour as a film I'm glad exists and was a powerful experience, but I never, ever want to see again. I do want to watch the DVD because it's got like 40 extra minutes. I want to see the longer
version, yeah.
Ernest and Celestine.
Oh, great.
Or Celestine. Simply the most charming animation I have ever seen. I'm very curious to see the English dub if it ever gets released over here. Now, we got sent a nice French.
Yeah, I saw the French version, which DVD. Was lovely, and then the English dub is about to premiere at Sundance.
8. Glad we're not reading this in front of Manola Dargis, Iron Man 3.
No.
She hated. Probably my second favorite Marvel film after The Avengers.
Mm.
Zero Dark Thirty. Released here in January. It still infuriates me that it didn't get Best Picture last year, and Catherine Bigelow was snubbed. I liked Argo, but this was better. It was much, much better. So much better. Stories We Tell. I've never come out of a screen with more questions about the nature of truth and storytelling. Wonderful exploration of cinematic and familial truth. The Patience Stone, which I did not see. Another film that's hard to sit through, but weirdly positive. Golshifteh Farahani's.
Oh, I remember when that opened.
Performance astonishing. I don't know that actor's name. Short Term 12, a beautiful, uplifting, so upsetting film that explores an unknown corner of social work.
You need to see it.
I know. Pacific Rim. You're probably going to knife me hard for this one, but it's giant robots fighting giant monsters, and it's awesome. And you are right. I loved Pacific Rim.
Look, I take a backseat to no one when it comes to enjoying giant robots giant monsters.
I know.
I couldn't see anything.
I know. Well, you saw it wrongly.
Apparently.
Gravity. He tells you why, but everybody knows why. Number one, Before Midnight.
Yay.
Brilliant way to cap off a trilogy that was probably never meant to exist. I hated Before Sunrise and was ambivalent towards Before Sunset. I agree with
you. Same here, actually, yeah.
But if you treat it as one story, it's an amazing experience, an exploration of a long-term relationship that feels so natural and real. I agree. I really like Before Midnight. I was not at all interested in Before Sunrise, other than the Daniel Johnston song that played over the closing credits. And
Before Sunset,
I just thought, you know, whatever with that.
I got to present the Best Screenplay Award
to
Richard Linklater and Julie Delpy.
Yeah, just this past Saturday night. We had dinner with them at our table.
Yes.
Actually, you had dinner with them. I had dinner and talked to Christy Lemire of What the Flick and her husband, Chris.
Right.
It was a big table.
It was.
But you were talking to Linklater and
Delpy. Cate Blanchett was way on the other end of our table. Cate Blanchett
was also at our table, and she was across the way. It was a 12-seater.
Yeah, big round
table. Big round 12-person table. We did not speak one word to Cate Blanchett.
No.
And she was late. She didn't eat a piece of food. Like, she showed up, the food was on her plate, she just looked at it.
Yeah.
Julie Delpy, on the other hand, cleaned her plate, including the bread and the dessert, and then began eating off of Linklater's plate and said, "I'm so hungry."
We love her.
And that is why now I really love Julie Delpy. If that Alamo Drafthouse PSA about shutting up and not texting in the movie wasn't enough for me to super love her and this movie, which I thought was so great, now I will follow her anywhere now.
She was awesome. And we have, in years past, been stuck at tables with people who, like, did not even make eye contact.
Right. Like Cate Blanchett.
Well, no. But I mean, like, but even like the people that I was supposedly presenting the award to.
Right, they wouldn't even talk to you, turn their back to you and stuff.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. Exactly. But Julie Delpy, like, introduced herself and was very engaging.
Guy from Monk.
Yes. Julie Delpy was great. And Richard Linklater, I've known for a million years.
You've known him forever.
Yeah. I mean, we're not, like, tight, but.
But you've known him forever.
I've known him forever.
Yeah. So, knife away, he says. I love your podcast that continues to blend two of my favorite things in podcasting. Insightful movie reviews and bickering married couples. I don't think we're bickery. Everyone says we bicker. I don't think we bicker.
Well, we banter.
Is that the same thing?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I think
bickering to me makes me think of the Bickersons,
right.
that cartoon. And
well, that's the Lockhorns.
And or whatever.
The Bickersons was a radio.
Okay. Well, in any case, I always think of that word in association with people who don't get along.
Right.
You and I get along famously. Well, not famously. Obscurishly.
Cultishly.
Me and him get along just fine. All right?
I think I'll have another
drink. You got it? That's how it is in this house. Everything's fine.
Dave's quoting an old Life in Hell comic. Your list, Colin, is 100% knife. I'll even give you Pacific Rim because, you know, I'm sure if I saw it, I still never got around to seeing it in 2D. So I'm sure would make a big difference.
Here's a Christmas list.
Great.
Alonzo and Dave, thank you for your highly entertaining podcast of the cinema. Since you love the Christmas time and asked for it, here are my top five and bottom five Christmas films. Okay. Worst. Uh-huh. Number one, Santa with Muscles.
Which I still need to see.
Number two, Fred Claus.
Ugh.
Number three, Jack Frost, the Michael Keaton one.
Ugh.
Number four, How the Grinch Stole Christmas.
Oh, the live action one? Forget
Parenthetically, it, yeah. He adds, Jim Carrey and Ron Howard poop all over Dr. Seuss. Number five, Jingle All the Way.
Ugh.
Best. Number one, Christmas Vacation. Number two, Muppet Christmas Carol. Number three, Original Miracle on 34th Street.
Okay.
Number four, Bad Santa. Mm-hmm. Number five, Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. Mm-hmm. Honorable mention, Home Alone. Much respect and film love, Bjorn from Dallas. With a name like Bjorn, you would think he would be from somewhere else.
Dallas is a very international city.
Bjorn has actually written us before. He and I are Facebook friends. I know exactly who this is.
I know. We are, too. You're not so special.
Dearest film critics, Alonzo Duralde and Dave White.
Mm-hmm.
First, I want to give you a list of 10 films that I enjoy. I'm not saying these are my favorite, but I could watch... Wait. They're not his favorites, but he could watch them again and again. So those are your favorites, dude. You watch them again and again.
Well, I think
there's favorites, and then there's best.
I think he means they are his favorites, but that they aren't necessarily the films he would call the best.
Right. Number one, Repo, the Genetic Opera.
Wow.
Boy, did I hate that movie.
Didn't see it.
Super hated Repo, the Genetic Opera.
Didn't feel like I needed
Every minute of that movie. I hated that movie.
I don't think I saw any of the Paris Hilton movies. I didn't see that or The Hottie and the Naughty.
Oh, God. The Hottie and the Naughty. There's a special place in hell for the people who are responsible for The Hottie and the Naughty. You didn't see House of Wax 3D.
I did see House of Wax
3D. Oh, you did? Okay.
I did.
2, Wendy and Lucy.
Oh, great.
Fantastic movie. 3, Big Fish. I'm not a fan of Big Fish. 4, Ghost World.
Yay.
The Pirates, Band of Misfits.
Oh, that's fun.
This is great, yeah. Secondhand Lions. I haven't seen that
one. I know that one. It's Haley Joel Osment and Michael Caine, I think.
Never saw it.
Never saw it.
Meet the Feebles. Mm-hmm. Last Action Hero, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
Pieces of April, which I do not care about.
No.
Not interested in Pieces of April. And Toys, which I dig and you do not.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. So because I dig it and you do not.
What is that, a 65%?
You're a 65 on this one, dude.
Oof.
We're so sorry.
I mean, you're a contrarian, bless you and all, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you contraried with us. And that is why you fail.
Big mistake.
He goes on. Now, as a fan, I think you guys would benefit from recording an intro for new listeners, briefly describing the podcast and who each of you are. You could, like a thing that we would just push a button on every, it's okay. You could use that to begin every episode once the music is finished playing. That way you wouldn't have to go through remembering to do that every time. Look, sometimes we remember in the middle of the podcast. Sometimes we remember never. That way, Alonso could also do the same for when you guys end every podcast and mention the other podcasts that we should listen to. See, this is...
That's not a bad idea.
I'm bored with the end of this podcast, always. Like, when you start reading the list, I check out.
I know. But you know what? People tell me that they have found other shows that way.
I know.
Other shows have started plugging us because of that list.
I know.
So you just hush your mouth.
This is all just a thought, gentlemen, but I think it would just make things easier for you if you would just had to hit a play button for the things that are brought up every episode. Also, I enjoy the banter between the two of you and can appreciate the differences in tastes and opinions that you two have, as well as the similarities, whether it be movies or music. Thank you for the podcast that lets me know each and every week what movies to go out and see and what I can skip. I am a loyal fan and listener. And I think the two of you could have your own movie review show online, something along the lines of What the Flick, or which is Mr. Duralde is already a part of course. Thank you once again. P.S. I would like to receive information about how to purchase Alonzo's book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. Oh, wait. I will be purchasing it for myself as a sort of birthday Christmas gift, seeing as I have my birthday on December 9th. I hope it's not too late. Well,
did we not do
it's
this?
It's too late for your birthday, I guess.
Oh, dude.
Speaking of which, it would be an honor if the two of you guys would wish me a happy birthday on your next podcast, which should go out on December 8th, the day before my birthday.
God, I'm so sorry. This is all Dave's fault. This is Dave White's fault.
I would be ever so grateful to you if you do so. My name is Caleb, and thanks for all the free hours of listening pleasure. All right, Caleb, first of all,
God, we're so sorry,
you're a 65%
Caleb.
Knife, all right? So the fact that we were late with your birthday greeting is not our fault. It's yours.
How
you like them apples, Caleb?
You're not pinning this on poor Caleb. This is on you, Dave White. Loser of letters.
Caleb, happy birthday. 1 month late.
We hope it was an exceptional day.
We might just send you a copy of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas for free as a late birthday gift.
We feel really terrible about this.
You feel really terrible about this.
And I'm mad at you.
I just feel somewhat embarrassed.
We hope that 2014...
But not super embarrassed.
We hope that 2014 is a wonderful year for you, Caleb.
We hope you're actually listening to this episode and that you haven't abandoned us.
Yes.
Because of this cock-up. Email us again and tell us how to send you a book.
We'll send you one. It is the least we can do. God.
Hey, David Alonso. This week, y'all referenced the new commentary coming, and I wanted to know how soon I can get it and maybe what it is. Well, it's the Apple, and we talked about that. Also, I have a best worst list of 2013, if y'all are still interested in reading off some of them on the next show. Bear in mind, I need to see Her because it isn't playing anywhere closer than Los Angeles or Irvine until the 10th of January, so for all I know, it could be up there. Best of 2013. Number 1, Upstream Color.
Woo!
Manola, not a fan.
I noticed that. We didn't press her on that.
I need to go read her review of that. Yeah. Two, Gravity. Three, mm-hmm. Beyond the Hills. Mm-hmm. So great. Mm-hmm. Four, Blue is the Warmest Color. Five, The World's End. Six, Inside Llewyn Davis. Seven, Short Term 12. Mm-hmm. Eight, The Past. Nine, All is Lost. 10, Before Midnight, / American Hustle, / Spring Breakers, / The Act of Killing, / Don't Make Me Choose.
Look, I did a top 25 this year. I feel your pain.
That's 100% knife.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Worst, thankfully, I didn't pay for most of these, but that did little to diminish my hatred for them. Number one, Instructions Not Included. I have no idea why people enjoyed this. It increased my loathing of the entirety of humanity. Two, The Great Gatsby, my least favorite director in the world, strikes again.
Wow.
Three, Now You See Me. Four, The Hangover Part 3. Mm-hmm. Five, Movie 43. Sorry, Alonzo. Mm-hmm. Thanks again for the fantastic podcast and the great White Christmas commentary, Robbie Beck. Robbie also wrote us this week, angry, I think, at Manola. about Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
I think he did. Or maybe he just messaged me. Either way, Robbie hates Manola.
I think it might have been a Facebook.
This is not a comments. Joni loves Chachi situation anymore at all.
Well, we adore Manola, and she is one of our.
Also, we adore you, Robbie Beck.
She's a dear friend, even if we don't always agree on.
We everything. Find you adorable. I think. Yes, we do.
Sure.
All right. Those are the letters for today.
Okay. Fine.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's that time of the show when I say all the things. As always, we thank you for listening. Check out ChristyLemire.com. If you're a SiriusXM subscriber, check out Rotten Tomatoes Radio with Matt Atchity and Gray Drake. Also, the Frank DiCaro Show and Derek and Romaine. Podcast wise, you should be.
We were just on Derek and Romaine recently, and yes, we did not fight with Romaine.
We did not.
I'm looking forward to the next time we're on. And I'm going to pick a fight over something. I cannot wait.
And Romaine,
get ready, Romaine.
And whoever it is, if Romaine,
someone told on
us. If you're listening, or if you are the one who's tattling to Romaine, if we didn't
keep tattling,
if we didn't like,
we don't care.
If we didn't like her, we wouldn't like arguing with her. So it's a sign of
Romaine is quite nice.
Yes, it's a sign of affection in our world.
But she hates rhubarb. Black and white movies, and therefore she is my enemy.
Well, yeah,
and must be battled. Every time.
In the podcast universe, check out The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Cooking with Malcolm Ingram, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, The B-Movies Podcast with our friends Whitney and Bibbs, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, The Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch. You can subscribe to this show for free at iTunes, and if you want to leave us a good review there, that would be super great. It really helps us get seen by people in the giant morass of iTunes podcasts. You can stream the show for free at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com or on our Facebook page, which you should totally go like, Linoleum Knife Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at GetGlue.com, and you can drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com with questions, comments, top 10 lists. We will do our best to not let things fall by the wayside.
You
a month late happy birthday.
You could begin pre-ordering the Apple commentary if you want to do.
If you want to. You could even pre-order t-shirts. We are
don't pre-order a t-shirt.
It's too complicated.
Too complicated.
Don't pre-order
t-shirts. Don't pre-order a t-shirt. We haven't ordered even any new ones yet, so.
But we're going to very soon.
Yeah. But the commentary will be up next week, and so you could totally pre-order those.
Sure. So drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We'll tell you what
$1.99.
We'll tell you what that involves. I will be back from Sundance next week with stories to tell.
I've got the whole weekend off now.
Lucky you.
So great.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.